VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Thank you for joining us on Crosstalk. It's a news roundup day here today, and there is a ton of things to report on. We're going to delve right into it today. Ladies and gentlemen, from townhall.com, it's over. It's unanimous. Kyle Rittenhouse found not guilty of all charges. He was charged with first-degree reckless homicide, first-degree reckless endangering safety, first-degree intentional homicide, and attempted first-degree intentional homicide. A conviction of just one count could have landed him pretty much a life sentence. Let's go to that courtroom where earlier today we heard this transpire.
All right, members of the jury, have you elected a foreperson? Would you give your juror number, please?
54.
And has the jury reached a verdict as to each count of the information?
Yes, we have, Your
Honor. One verdict and one verdict only?
Yes.
Would you hand all of the paperwork to the bailiff, please?
This is the ones that you didn't know.
Okay. Everything.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks. The defendant will rise, face the jury, and hearken to its verdicts.
State of Wisconsin versus Kyle Rittenhouse. As to the first count of the information, Joseph Rosenbaum, we, the jury, find the defendant, Kyle H. Rittenhouse, not guilty. As to the second count of the information, Richard McGinnis, we, the jury, find the defendant, Kyle H. Rittenhouse, not guilty. As to the third count of the information, unknown male, we, the jury, find the defendant, Kyle H. Rittenhouse, not guilty. As to the fourth count of the information, Anthony Huber, we, the jury, find the defendant, Kyle H. Rittenhouse, not guilty. As to the fifth count of the information, Gage Grosskreutz, we, the jury, find the defendant, Kyle H. Rittenhouse, not guilty.
Members of the jury, are these your unanimous verdicts? Is there anyone who does not agree with the verdicts as read?
That was in the courtroom this morning. The thud you heard after that last charge was Kyle, in essence, collapsing with emotion as the verdict of not guilty was found on all charges. Rittenhouse was 17 years old when he shot and killed Anthony Huber and Joe Rosenbaum in Kenosha during the 2020 riots. He claimed self-defense. The video evidence backed that up. The testimony of Gage Grosskreutz, who was also shot by Rittenhouse, seemed to deliver a massive blow to the prosecution's case against him. One of the DAs had a visible facepalm moment when Grosskreutz admitted he was shot only after he pointed his gun at Rittenhouse. Kyle Rittenhouse found not guilty. Coming to us from Fox News, the Wisconsin judge presiding over this case yesterday had banned staff from MSNBC from entering the courthouse for the remainder of the trial. In a brief statement before the court Thursday, the judge addressed an incident in which a person who identified himself as an employee for MSNBC allegedly followed a sealed bus with blocked out windows as it left the courthouse to transport jurors to an undisclosed location. And one of the prosecuting star witnesses in the homicide trial of Rittenhouse has a long criminal rap sheet, and some charges he faced were dropped just before the trial began last month, according to report. Gage Grosskreutz, who was shot and injured by Rittenhouse during the riot in Kenosha last summer, was called by the state in its attempt to prove that Rittenhouse acted maliciously, reports Western Journal. Grosskreutz admitted during cross-examination that Rittenhouse only shot him in the arm after he drew a gun on the teen. A new report claims that Grosskreutz had a criminal record spanning more than a decade. Been accused of burglary, drunk driving, carrying a loaded gun while intoxicated, domestic abuse, prowling, and trespassing, Daily Mail reported. Also had a history of disobeying and lying to police. Coming from USA Today, President Biden underwent a routine colonoscopy this morning and while under anesthesia, temporarily transferred presidential powers to Vice President Kamala Harris. The first woman vice president became the first woman to assume presidential power. WND.com, a lengthy analysis of Kamala Harris's performance as vice president, the first minority woman VP by leftist CNN, concludes This is CNN. Conclude, she's crashing. She's crashing. The story is on WND.com. CNN interviewed several dozen sources and explained that exasperation and dysfunction are playing prominent roles in the Biden White House when it comes to the nation's second in command. CNN explains that Harris is frustrated that she's been given a number of dead end assignments that can only undercut her prospects for a future political career. The analysis said that interviews with nearly three dozen former and current Harris aides, administration officials, Democratic operatives, donors, and outside advisors reveal a complex reality inside the White House. The vice president herself has told several confidants that she feels constrained in what she's able to do politically, and those around her remain wary of even hinting at future political ambitions. The analysis describes her as having a, quote, rocky relationship with some parts of the White House. Well, the House on Friday voted to pass the $1.8 trillion Democratic social spending bill, moving President Biden's signature legislative initiative one step closer to being signed into law, reports the National Review. The measure passed 220 to 213. After House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy delivered a record-breaking 8-hour-long speech on the House floor during debate in which he blasted Biden and Democrats on an array of issues from Afghanistan to the border and called the reconciliation bill the single most reckless and irresponsible spending bill in our nation's history. Also from town hall, even through though the White House maintained that Biden's social spending bill is paid for and will cost $0, a final score released yesterday by the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office found the Build Back Better plan would cause a net increase in the national deficit totaling $367 billion, not counting additional tax revenue that would be generated by Democratic plans to ramp up IRS enforcement. And Build Back Better bill could cost taxpayers $10.5 billion by boosting illegal alien eligibility for benefits. Currently, applicants must provide a valid Social Security number in order to receive benefits, but that requirement is eliminated if Build Back Better becomes law. U.S. taxpayers would be on the hook for a total of $10.5 billion in payments to illegal alien children and illegal alien parents with U.S.-born children, Fox News reports. It's Stephen Camerata. A Center for Immigration Studies researcher estimated that eliminating the requirements could result in up to $2.3 billion in additional child tax credit payouts to illegal immigrants. Also estimates $8.2 billion payout from the expanded child tax credits to illegal immigrants with U.S.-born children. The reconciliation would make it even easier for illegal aliens to receive payments next year by eliminating the work requirement. I find it very interesting that the word reconciliation in one media was spelled out wreck, W-R-E-C-K, reconciliation, like a car wreck. And that's exactly what would be happening with this legislation. From the Hill, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen told congressional leaders Tuesday that the federal government could default on its debt as soon as, well, right after December 15th, without action to raise the federal borrowing limit. Didn't we just go through this battle a little while ago? In a Tuesday letter, Yellen said that she has a high degree of confidence in Treasury's ability to keep the U.S. current on debt payments until midway through next month, warning, however, that the U.S. could run out of cash soon after transferring some $118 billion to the Highway Trust Fund to comply with the recently passed bipartisan infrastructure bill in which several Republicans caved to the Democratic whims in that legislation. From CNSNews.com, Senator is rattled off just a number of increases. This is John Kennedy Wednesday talking about how consumers are just being hit in the pocketbooks. Gasoline prices up 50%. You need a used car or truck? They're up 26%. A turkey is up 20.2%. Beef, 20.1%. Bedroom furniture, 12% higher than last year. Televisions up 10%. Baby food up 8%. Children's clothes, 7.6%. And Kennedy said, I could keep going on. And folks, you have felt that in your purchasing power as well here in the grocery stores and just for common household items as well. From FoxNews.com, President Biden's nominee to lead a branch of the Treasury Department was arrested in 1995 for retail theft. Yeah, this is they're going through confirmation hearings. Criminal background checks of Saul Omarova, the president's nominee to lead the office of the Comptroller of the Currency. Somebody who has a history of being arrested for retail theft. According to the background check, was arrested by Madison police, Wisconsin police officers. This is FoxNews.com, June 2nd, 1995, charged with a misdemeanor count of retail theft. Background checks also show her as having a deferred prosecution in 1996 for the charge that was dropped through the Wisconsin First Offender Program. The White House defended the nomination in a statement to Fox News, saying the nominee has been fully transparent about the incident throughout her career. She's also the one that is wanting to cancel personal bank accounts, not allowing you to have your personal bank accounts, and also one who said, we heard with Alex Newman the other day, to bankrupt oil and gas, the industries, the energy industries here in the nation. She is desiring to bankrupt them. That's the words of her own mouth. Let's go to Western Journal. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas defended the Biden department, the Biden's administration handling of the border crisis on Tuesday, saying the federal government deserves an A grade with regard to handling the security at the U.S.-Mexico border. I want you to listen to his response to Lindsey Graham as he was questioned.
Let's just pull back a little bit and just ask some basic questions. Do you believe that the Biden immigration policies are successful?
Senator, I think rebuilding a broken immigration system and rebuilding a dismantled one takes time, and we're on the road to success.
So you think we're on the right track as a nation?
I do.
Okay. How would you grade yourself?
Senator, I'm a tough grader on myself, and I give myself an A for effort, investment, in mission, and support of our workforce.
You know, we see our borders crumbling, and he's giving himself an A grade for effort, an A grade in effort. Now, I don't have time to play a clip. I'll play it on the other side of the break because he is questioned further by Senator Mike Lee in that regard. But, folks, I want you to understand also the Vice President of the United States is blaming President Trump for the border crisis. Here's what she had to say when on, she was on ABC George Stephanopoulos.
Well, it's not going to be overnight. We can't just flip a switch and make it better. The reality is that we inherited a system, an immigration system that was deeply broken, and it's requiring us to actually put it back together in terms of creating a fair process that is effective and efficient. But on the root causes piece, what we're looking at is that, you know, frankly, people don't want to leave home, George.
Isn't that astounding? We inherited a broken immigration system. Our borders were secure, folks. They have stopped the building the border wall, and the leaks of immigrants coming through the nation have been astounding and scattered all throughout this nation. And she's blaming President Trump for that? Back in a minute here on Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, popular creation speaker with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, is there any evidence for Atlantis?
Chris, Atlantis was the mythical city which was submerged under the ocean. People living in the city adapted and finally evolved the ability to live underwater. Of course, this myth has no basis in fact. Humans could not live underwater, even if they swam in the water for generations. Nor have archaeological remains of such a mythical city ever been found. But there may be some basis in fact. The Bible says that there was a great civilization which was totally overwhelmed by water. This was, of course, the great flood of Noah's day. I wonder if the legend of Atlantis is really a faded memory of the flood. Even more interesting is that almost every culture around the world has the legend of the flood. I think all of this goes back to Genesis for truth.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
We've got a news roundup day here today on Crosstalk, and so much happening in the news. Again, if you missed the top story today, Kyle Rittenhouse found innocent on all charges as they came from the jury here just hours ago. We were talking about this grilling of the Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas Tuesday over the impact of President Biden's policies at the border and so forth. And Senator Mike Lee also grilled him. Now, we saw Kamala Harris, vice president, who talked about inheriting, you know, this broken up system, this broken up issues at the border, and how they have to. It's going to take time to put this all in under control and get it fixed here. But listen further as Senator Mike Lee grills Mayorkas at this hearing on Tuesday.
Senator Lee. Thank you very much, Mr. Secretary. Moments ago, you said you gave yourself an A, maybe an A for effort on dealing with workforce issues at the Department of Homeland Security. I know that's important. You rely on your people. Now, you've got about 17,000 Border Patrol agents. Is that right?
I'm sorry. We have about 16,000, 17,000 on the border.
On the border. On the border. Let's talk about those for a minute. 16,000, 17,000 on the southern border. What happens, and this ties back to your desire to give yourself an A for effort on dealing with workforce issues, but what happens when you've got potentially thousands of those, a pretty large percentage, who might soon become ineligible to work based on their vaccination status? Does that hurt or help our operational control of the border?
Senator, I hope that doesn't prove to be the case. We are seeing a tremendous uptick in the number of Border Patrol agents along the southern border who are indeed receiving their vaccinations. I hope that does not materialize.
Yes, you hope, but do you have a plan for maintaining this? Would you be willing to share that plan with us in writing in the next 2 weeks?
I would most certainly be pleased to do so.
I appreciate that. And on the topic of workforce relations, on which you give yourself an A for effort, what about the issue with your Border Patrol agents recently being accused by some folks in the media of whipping illegal immigrants, when in fact they were not? Why on earth did you not defend them? I mean, has no one in your entire department ever become aware of how one uses split reins when riding a horse?
Oh, Senator, let me say two things. Number one, I put 100% into my work, and I'm incredibly proud to do so. That's number one. Number two, I stand with the men and women of our department through and through, and I will not prejudge facts before.
Did you defend them when they were being attacked for whipping people, which they were not?
Senator, what I said quite clearly is that the independent investigation will determine the facts, and those facts will drive the outcome.
Okay.
Nothing less and nothing more.
Your response and your failure to defend them then and now is nothing short of morale crushing. If you want to maintain or obtain operational control of the border, which you do not now have, this is not a way to get there.
Senator Mike Lee grilling Secretary Mayorkas Tuesday of this week on border-related issues. There's so much more that happened in that meeting. I'd love to be able to play clips, but time does not allow for us to go further down that route. Let's go to the National Review. OSHA has suspended implementation and enforcement of the Biden administration's vaccine mandate for private employers after a federal court blocked the measure. The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals is to hear legal challenges to the mandate after a Tuesday ping pong ball raffle to determine which court would hear the challenges. 12 ping pong balls, one representing each court, were placed into a drum in Washington, D.C. The winning ball was selected by a representative from the Judicial Panel on Multi-District Litigation. The Sixth Circuit Court, by the way, covers Tennessee, Kentucky, Ohio, and Michigan. It's comprised of 11 Republican-appointed judges, with only 5 appointed by Democratic presidents. In other words, what was once considered a center-right court has become solidly conservative. That's thanks to 6 judges that were appointed by former President Donald Trump. Fox Business reporting Food and Drug Administration Friday approved requests by COVID-19 vaccine makers Moderna and Pfizer to expand the administration of their booster shots to all U.S. adults. The booster can be used in all individuals 18 years and older who have completed a primary vaccination with any other authorized or approved COVID-19 vaccine, they report. Folks, it's going to be a matter of time, just a matter of time, before all those who've had 2 shots will no longer be considered fully vaxxed. And that third shot is going to be required to become fully vaxxed. It's coming up. It's going to happen. And then perhaps the 4th shot and the 5th, the boosters that will forever go on here through the COVID-19 shot program. Epoch Times, a source who works with Bank of America, has disclosed a pilot program beginning November 18th that plans to separate vaccinated from unvaccinated employees at an administration building in Jacksonville, Florida. The source, who wanted to remain anonymous, told the Epoch Times that the program was initiated as a way to bring employees back to the office after a period of working remotely. But the plan does cast a dark shadow on potential future society. Segregation just to blow away, they report. Very interesting how they will plan to put all one status of employees who have been have the shot on one floor, those who have not on another floor, and it appears that never the twain shall meet. From WND.com, a new report claims that two New York City's departments, including the New York Fire Department, have filed fraudulent vaccine cards to comply with the city's vaccine mandate. The FDNY and sanitation departments are being investigated, according to the New York Post. We also have here from the Washington Examiner, millions of truckers. Folks, if you thought that we had a supply chain issue, now just wait. Millions of truckers are balking at President Biden's workplace vaccine mandate, which would be catastrophic for the nation's supply chain problem if it's enforced, an American Trucking Association executive told House members this week. We've tried to be very clear to the administration. I understand the logic behind it, but if you do this, these are the consequences, said ATA President Chris Spear. So if you're trying to solve the supply chain problem, you're actually compounding it and actually hurting the very problem you're trying to fix. The ATA is the largest trucking trade group. They're currently short 80,000 truckers compared to pre-pandemic levels. 80,000 truckers. Think about that. But if the January 4th vaccine deadline is enforced, the industry is said to lose 37% of all its truckers, or 2.5 million people, according to an ATA survey. Think what the supply shortage is going to do then. Also coming to us here from Forbes.com, nearly one-third of healthcare workers in U.S. hospitals still not vaccinated. And as such, they're also facing a deadline to federal mandate there. WND.com tells us that defiance of the Biden administration's vaccine mandate has reached new heights as the new commander of the Oklahoma National Guard openly declared that the mandate no longer applies to those under his command. Army Brigadier General Thomas Mancino made the announcement last week in a memo regarding vaccines. Republican Governor Kevin Stitt announced Mancino's appointment. And additionally, no negative administrative or legal action will be taken against guardsmen who refuse the COVID-19 vaccine, he wrote. They estimate that over 800 Oklahoma guardsmen have not yet and do not plan on receiving the shot. That constitutes 10% of Oklahoma's overall force. Said, we're not going that way. We're not going to bow to that order. CBN News reporting another California school board has voted to stand up to Governor Gavin Newsom, unanimously rejecting the state's vaccine mandate for students or staff. That's the Calaveras Unified School District Board of Trustees voted 5-0 not to support or enforce or comply with the pending COVID-19 vaccine mandate. The district encompasses some 10 schools, 2,800 students. We understand that other school systems also taking that stand. From CBN News, the Virginia Pilot reports that Dr. Paul Merrick, professor of medicine, chief of pulmonary and critical care at Eastern Virginia Medical School, who gained international attention in 2017 for an unconventional but successful sepsis treatment he developed, filed his injunction request last week in Norfolk Circuit Court. He argues that Sentara Healthcare is endangering the lives of its COVID patients by preventing doctors from using a treatment protocol developed by him and several other critical care specialists across the country. Among the medications included in his treatment plan is ivermectin, a drug that's for parasites that's been promoted as a treatment for COVID despite a lack of FDA approval. Patients at Sentara Norfolk General Hospital are dying who should not be, the lawsuit said. And said they are dying because unjustifiably and unlawfully they are being denied potentially life-saving treatment determined to be medically appropriate for them by their attending physicians. Doctors are standing up and giving some pushback to this as well. Want to see what's going on in Canada? This is from notthebee.com. That means they're true stories. Canada's chief health officer says Christmas caroling is too dangerous and that people should open their windows during holiday gatherings. Dr. Theresa Tam, the chief public health officer, said singing indoors is not recommended this Christmas, even among people who are fully vaccinated. In the wintertime, going inside with a lot of people shouting and singing is not the best idea if COVID is circulating and accelerating outside your front door. Tam also advised that anyone gathered for an indoor event this winter, even fully vaccinated people, should keep their windows open, particularly if ventilation is not optimal. The question that many, why? Why? If you're fully, what does the shot do for you? What does the shot do for you if indeed you are supposed to follow all the other rules everybody else is for fear of getting COVID? Epic Times is reporting the FDA asking a federal judge November 15th to give it until the year, listen to this, 2076 to fully release the documents in its possession tied to the approval of the Pfizer BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine. They want to wait for the full disclosure of their papers for 55 years. What's being hid? DailyWire.com. On Wednesday, President Biden, yet another effort to place the blame for inflated prices anywhere but on his own shoulders, called for the Federal Trade Commission to investigate major oil and gas companies over rising gas prices, sending a letter to the head of the Federal Trade Commission to call her attention to mounting evidence of anti-consumer behavior by oil and gas companies. Ladies and gentlemen, it's my opinion that they are not the ones launching anti-consumer behavior. It's coming from the executive of the top executive of our land, right from the Oval Office, from the president himself. This whole issue triggered the American Petroleum Institute to fire back and places the blame back on Biden. They wrote, this is a distraction from the fundamental market shift that is taking place in the ill-advised government's decisions that are exacerbating this challenging situation. Rather than launching investigations on markets that are regulated and closely monitored on a daily basis, of pleading with OPEC to increase supply, we should be encouraging the safe and responsible development of American-made oil and natural gas. Folks, we had become energy dependent. We were actually becoming exporter of oil and under the Trump administration. And now, with all the cancellation of the pipelines, we've seen also the orders to not drill with federal lands in many locations, that all of a sudden now President Biden feeling the heat and trying to blame oil companies over the rising gas prices. We're going to take a quick break. I have a few more stories I'd like to share with you here today on our news roundup. Stay with us. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
Nearly 90% of Christian children attend a public school. Filmmaker Colin Gunn, a homeschool father of seven, went on the field trip of a lifetime. Driving an old school bus, Colin and his family traveled across the nation, exploring the origins and social impact of public school education to discover if children are morally and physically safe, if public schools are religiously neutral, and should Christians try to be salt and light in secular schools. 102 minutes in length, it's an impactful message. In the companion book, Indoctrination, some 18 writers come together to look at how the educational system is actively at work to alter your child's moral values, worldview, and religious beliefs. It explores the biblical principles regarding education and who is ultimately responsible for our children's future. The Indoctrination DVD is available for a donation of $22. The book is available for a donation of $18. Or you can obtain both for a donation of $35. To obtain yours, call 1-800-729-9829.
1-800-729-9829. This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Friends, it's amazing to see the tools that are being unleashed against parents across this land. Pamela Geller has a story. on the FBI emails that the Attorney General Merrick Garland authorized. Just think if he were on the Supreme Court. He authorized use of counterterrorism tools against parents who opposed critical race theory. Internal FBI emails published by a whistleblower within the powerful federal agency reveal that Attorney General Merrick Garland authorized the use of counterterrorism tools to surveil, track, and spy on parents who oppose the teaching of extremist critical race theory in schools. The counterterrorism and criminal divisions created a threat tag, edu officials, to track instances of related threats. We ask that your offices apply the threat tag to investigations and assessments of threats specifically directed against school board administrators, board members, teachers, and staff. Republicans are demanding the resignation of Merrick Garland following what appears to be a significant abuse of power in pursuit of criminalizing dissent from CRT in the schools. And from WorldviewWeekend.com, an FBI SWAT team raided the home of an activist mother of three in Colorado on Tuesday, knocking down her door, bursting into the house, handcuffing her while she was homeschooling her children. This is the first known case of the federal government making good on its promise to not only intimidate, but actually carry out a raid on a mom who was involved in her local school board politics, said Brandon House, who interviewed Sharona Bishop on his live broadcast, Lindell TV, Wednesday night. Just think, having the home raided by the FBI, was it battering rams that were used to gain access? Amazing. Townhall.com, an elementary school in Connecticut, requiring its students to engage in its social justice lesson standards that includes transgender content being exposed to children as early as kindergarten. District officials inform parents they will not be allowed to opt out of the curricula. One parent was particularly disturbed by a book taught to fourth graders entitled When Aiden Becomes a Brother. When Aiden was born, everyone thought he was a girl. His parents gave him a pretty name. His room looked like a girl's name, and he wore clothes that other girls like wearing, the book's description reads. After he realized he was a trans boy, Aiden and his parents fixed the parts of his life that didn't fit anymore, and he settled happily into his new life. Connecticut kindergartners being taught that. District officials saying, parents, you may not opt out your children. From the New York Post, a New Hampshire teenager suing his school district after he was allegedly suspended from athletics. What did he do? Said there were only two genders. The Exeter High School freshman said in his suit that he was hit with a one-game football suspension in September stemming from a text conversation he had with another student off of school grounds. Claims that Exeter's policy on non-binary gender identity and pronouns infringes on his constitutional rights. Also, we have from LifeSiteNews.com, Lisa Miller, you remember her from some years ago, we've had her story on Crosstalk, fled the United States to protect her daughter from her allegedly abusive former partner, is facing prosecution by the Biden Justice Department after being brought back into the U.S. more than a decade later now. Miller, who had renounced homosexuality and converted to evangelical Christianity, fled to Nicaragua in 2009 to avoid losing custody of her daughter Isabella, who was 7 years old at the time. The Millers were pursued by federal authorities for years during the Obama administration. Isabella is now 19, and a court order that granted custody to Miller's ex-partner, Janet Jenkins, no longer applies to her. That was the plan all along. When Isabella turned 18, they would return to the U.S., according to the 419 Fund. That's a Christian nonprofit that is raising money for her. Isabella said in an affidavit filed in February she was happy, safe, and healthy while living in Nicaragua, but now facing prosecution under the Biden administration. From the state of Wisconsin, from the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, two sets of Wisconsin parents are suing the Kettle Moraine School District for a policy that facilitates and affirms a minor student's gender transition at school, even over the parent's objection. The Kettle Moraine School District's policy violates parents' constitutional rights to raise their children by taking a major controversial and potentially life-altering decision out of parents' hands. That lawsuit in Waukesha County, filed by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty and Alliance Defending Freedom, their deputy counsel Luke Berg said schools cannot override parents when it comes to decisions about their children. Gender identity transitions are no exception. Schools must defer to parents about what is best for their child. Kraft Peanut Butter releases a kid's book on pronouns for Trans Awareness Week. Yeah, Kraft put out for Trans Awareness Week. We want to make the world more inclusive, so we're releasing a book with our friends, Nick North, about the importance of using pronouns, available on November 20th, with proceeds going to, Rainbow Railroad. But Kraft Foods getting into that. Let's see, also from the Daily Citizen, Alliance Defending Freedom attorneys have announced a settlement, bringing a close to a successful lawsuit by their Virginia resident Tanner Cross. Remember, he was suspended by the Loudoun County School Board after he spoke in opposition to a proposed gender identity policy at a school board meeting this past May. He's a Christian, teaches physical education at Leedsburg Elementary School, rose during the public comment portion at that May meeting, addressed the policy that would have required all district employees to use preferred pronouns of students, whether or not those corresponded to their biological sex. He said, "I love all my students, but I will never lie to them. I'm a teacher, but I serve God first, and I will not affirm that a biological boy can be a girl and vice versa because it's against my religion, it's lying to a child, it's abuse to a child, and it's sinning against our God." He won his lawsuit after opposing the district gender identity policy. The International Olympic Committee has labeled athlete sex testing as invasive and disrespectful in a new report that looks to promote inclusion for transgender competitors, reports News Sky. The new framework also states that no athlete should be excluded from competition on the grounds of a perceived unfair and disproportionate advantage due to their gender. It's going to replace the guidelines from 2015. Let's see. Also, California, same thing, debate. This is from FaithWire. Debate over preferred pronouns kicking into high gear in California. The state Supreme Court slated to hear a consequential case surrounding misgendering. That coming up there for in the state of California. Elizabeth Johnson has a story here today with the plight of Afghanistan following the Taliban takeover in August have largely left the headlines. The horror of life after the withdrawal of U.S. forces is still a very stark reality for the nation's millions of citizens. The nation's post-takeover economic instability is driving families into selling their young daughters as child brides. Writing for the Daily Signal, Kelsey Bolar recently highlighted how following the Biden administration withdrawal from Afghanistan, girls as young as 9 are being sold for the equivalent of a few thousand dollars just to have food for starving families. In a segment on CNN, there's a story of a young girl saying, "My father has sold me because we don't have bread, rice, and flour," the little girl told CNN. "He has sold me to an old man." In one devastating scene, the child can be seen clinging to her mother as her new, quote, husband drags her away. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. I'd like to open our phone lines. If you'd like to comment on these or other current event stories, our number here, 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829 here at Crosstalk. Certainly the Rittenhouse situation, things happening with the shot and the pulling back right now of the OSHA mandate. But the federal mandate still continues on for federal employees or those who contract with lots of issues on the table here today. 800-733-9829. Wisconsin's Governor Tony Evers has used federal COVID relief dollars to handsomely reward his allies at Planned Parenthood, an organization that has been generously in electing him. Over a year ago, Evers announced a $10 million grant program for Wisconsin nonprofits aimed at providing economic stabilization. Well, as of April, that's the last time they made the report, only $5.4 million of the $10 million had been distributed, and of that, more than 25%, $1.4 million, provided to Planned Parenthood facilities across the state of Wisconsin. LifeNews.com, City of Boston now allows its employees to take up 12 weeks of leave with pay when they abort their unborn babies. The New Boston Post reports that the city council passed the amendment to its parental leave policy September 15th. Vote was unanimous, and acting mayor Kim Janey signed it 2 days later. The new parental leave benefits for city employees allow up to 12 weeks of paid leave for men and women for pregnancy loss, including all abortions for any reason, according to the Post. The policy also allows leave time for parents of newborns and adoptive parents. Your thoughts on that issue? A reward for aborting your child? 12 weeks off? Paid leave? Interesting indeed. And by the way, also just keeping a track on China as well, the Daily Mail reporting the Chinese military now at near or the capability to invade Taiwan, according to a congressional report. The People's Liberation Army has already achieved the capabilities needed to conduct an air and naval blockade, cyber attacks, and missile strikes against Taiwan, according to a report from the U.S.-China Economic and Security Review Commission. Our number to crosstalk here today, 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. Let's go to Tony in Neillsville, Wisconsin. Tony, you're on the air.
Hey, I'm a first-time caller, and I just wanted to say a couple of points, and I'll make it quick so somebody else can get on there. But first off, in 1997, my former pastor...
We're not going to name individuals or places right now here, Tony, but what is the substance of your comment?
He was talking about this very thing back in 1997 when he was given a breakdown of the Book of Revelation about things to come, but mm-hmm. I didn't realize it was going to be this severe. And then the Egyptian man that you have on your radio.
Usama Dakdak. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was here in Neillsville about 3 years ago at the church I was going to and given a breakdown. And when President Trump was just new in office and was talking about this very thing, about how people get so hungry stealing the farmers' cattle to eat.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate your call, and thank you for listening here to Crosstalk. Appreciate it so much. Certainly, the things to come, folks, it's not going to get rosier. It's not going to get rosier, but certainly we have the responsibility of being salt and of light. Our number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. Senator Patrick Leahy announced he's not going to be seeking re-election. Folks, the numbers are piling up of those who announced that they will not be seeking re-election next year. There's seemed to be a mass exodus that would be taking place from the U.S. Congress and also from the U.S. Senate. And we will see what that is going to hold for us. But there are some wondering, will the Republic stay even in as fast as we have declined in the past 10 months since the takeover or the changeover has happened? Yeah, take over as well on values and so much more. We're going to take a quick break here on Crosstalk, and we'll come back to more of your calls here on the program. Our number today, 800-733-9829. Back in a minute on the VCY American Network.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. I've been looking at hate speech laws that are rising all over the world, from Scotland to Canada, and now calls in the U.S. increasing for hate speech legislation. What hate speech? Well, in many cases, speaking the truth about Islam. Now, they're going to push these so-called hate speech laws, many of them, including Tony Blair in Europe, by saying they want to fight anti-Semitism. Yet the funny thing is, and it's not funny, most of these people don't care one iota about the Jewish people or the Jewish state. That's a cover for implementing legislation to criminalize those who speak truth about things such as Islam or the LGBTQ community. What does the Bible say about this? Galatians 4:6, I have therefore become your enemy because I tell you the truth. And yet, we should be ready to tell the truth, even with a penalty.
A news roundup day here today, and we're taking your calls here on Crosstalk. Let's go to Lubbock, Texas. We have Butch calling in. Hi, Butch, you're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing? A great show you had today. I appreciate your being here. The leading cause of death in America, sadly, is, and it beats heart disease and cancer combined, is abortion. And to reward people for the 12 weeks of paid leave is sick and demonic. And I'd like to know what we can do about it, and I'll hang up and get your response. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you for your call. And, yeah, that is being passed in that particular state. I've got to find the state here to have that. But it's staying in contact with your own legislators on this matter. It's the legislators here that are passing things like this, or you'll have a city council sometimes put this in into being as well, and that's where it happens. It happens on the very local level, and it's important for so many times it's aldermen and mayors and county officers that are putting things into impact just like that, and it's truly troubling indeed. So it's staying in touch with your own state officials and saying, not here in our state. Don't you dare put this on in our state. Let's go to, Brookfield, Wisconsin. Jim, you're on the air.
I wanted to ask you, earlier in the week, they were talking about Biden's meeting with China. And the leader asked him, or didn't ask him, he threatened them about burning them. What do you think that meant?
I'm not going to read into it. I'm not sure what it meant. What are your thoughts on it, Jim?
I don't know. I just wondered. It was on all the news stations, and they said that the Chinese leader threatened them. He caved on Taiwan, and he said he was going to burn him. So does it mean that he was going to release information and burn him, threaten him physically? It was just an odd. It was just something odd, and I wondered if anybody that you talk to, or, you know, any of your other journalists you talk to, have heard anything about it.
I have not, Jim, and so I don't have any further answer than what has been heard in that regard. But it's pretty troubling. It's more question marks here at this point, isn't it?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. By the way, sorry, it was Boston with a 12 weeks paid leave for killing your baby in the womb. Our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Robert in Florence, Kentucky, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, I just think it's just absolutely disgrace that they're giving these people paid leave for killing a baby. It's just immoral. I mean, it goes against the Bible. Everything against it is just bad. And it just surprises me that this country, with all the things that are going wrong, are just taking it on a chin, so to speak, and just letting things happen.
Yeah, it's the city of Boston, and same city that allows all these flags to be put up. There was at their Constitution Square or something like that, and except the Christian flag. Oh, you can have the transgender flag, you can have the Pride flag, you can have Black Lives Matter flag, just not the Christian flag. And that case coming up soon before the U.S. Supreme Court in that regard, but that's the city of Boston.
If we don't do something soon, we're going to lose this country.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Robert. Thank you for your call. And it begins with prayer, but it is also behooving us to stand up, to let our voice be heard, and to take action as well. Wesley is calling from Toma, Wisconsin. You're on the air, Wesley.
Hey, how's it going today?
Fine, thank you.
I somewhat question if perhaps this is the time of Noah. Perhaps that's what we're seeing. I mean, when you look at the numbers of children being aborted and it's just general exception within the population, perhaps the time of Christ coming back isn't too far away.
Perhaps not. And it behooves us, Wesley, to occupy till he does come and to be engaged. But you make an interesting observation, because as we read in Genesis chapter 6, about the heart of man did that which is evil continuously, and it is quite the commentary of what we're seeing before our very eyes today.
No, and I definitely believe so. I grew up, well, I've been church my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not that old. I'm 27, but I I'm starting to wonder all of those times that the old boys in my church would tell me a Christ is coming. Like, I honestly do think he is. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to be the good virgin waiting with their lamp lit.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all I have to say.
Great. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. And indeed, Christ is coming back. He told us that. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go and prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again, he said, and will receive you unto myself, that where I am, there ye may be also. Annie is calling from Chilton, Wisconsin. You're on the air, Annie.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. I was calling about the abortion thing within 12 weeks paid leave.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make a comment as somebody that's on the front lines fighting against abortion. Like, I go to the death camps and stand out there. I was once told by the Catholics out there, because as we know, it's like a predominantly Catholic area when you go to the actual abortion mills, and just for telling someone to repent of their murder and to turn to Jesus, I was told I was too harsh by a Catholic lady and that I needed to tell the mother that just murdered her child that I was sorry for her loss. And I just couldn't bring myself to do that. I told her, I said, she just murdered her baby. So I think it starts with us, the church. We have to speak the truth, even if it does come off as hate sometimes, because we have created the second victim when the baby is the biggest victim in abortion, and we have to keep it that way and speak the truth and call these mothers what they are, and that's murderers, sadly.
Annie, thank you for your thoughts here today. We're going to squeeze in Emily in Missouri. Emily, we only have 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Yes, I was glad to hear about the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict. And I also wanted to thank you for the program you had last week about the January 6th people. And I wanted to encourage people to continue to pray for all the people that are being charged in that and are being held in jail in terrible conditions. And that's basically all. Thank you very much for your program.
Thank you, Emily, for your call here today and for listening as well. Friends, we're out of time here today. Troubling times in which we live. Yeah, Paul told Timothy in the last days perilous times would come. But let's stay faithful. Stay faithful to occupy until the Lord comes again. Continue to be salt. Continue to be light. Our time is gone here on Crosstalk today. We do thank you for tuning in. And just a reminder, the Lord's Day is coming. I trust you'll be in a Bible-believing, Bible-teaching local church. God bless you.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.